Joining us on the line now is Boff Welly. He was a member of the band Chumbawamba, recording and touring with them for 25 years. He co-wrote their hit song Tub Thumping, which got to number 2 in the UK charts in 1997. He went on to write plays and musicals and books on the sport of fell running, which he's been doing for over 30 years. His latest book is Faster, Louder, How a Punk Rocker from Yorkshire Became British Champion Fell Runner. It tells the story of his longtime friend, Gary Devine. Welcome to the show, Boff.
Yeah, glad to be here. Excellent.
It's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. And does it feel like a lifetime ago, the days of Chumbawamba and Tub Thumping? I mean, you must have some great memories.
It does, except that it just keeps cropping up everywhere. You know, people, it keeps, you know, it's either on some TV series or something, or somebody's playing it at the wedding or a football match. So, yeah. Can't get away from it.
No, but I mean, was it a good time when you remember, think back the late 90s and mid 90s and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was fascinating and exciting. Yeah, it was great.
And how did you get into music then?
I got into music because I always loved music, as a lot of people do growing up. But I couldn't play any instruments. But then I saw Sex Pistols on the telly in Burnley, where I came from, and I talked to people at school the day after, and we thought, we can do that. That kind of gave us permission to pick up instruments and start forming bands.
Yeah, brilliant. But I mean, being with the band and touring for a good 25 years or so, that's a long time.
That is a long time. You know, when Tub Thumping happened and people were saying, oh, what's it like to, you know, have a successful, you know, single or whatever, and we always said that the best way to measure success is the fact that we still got on after 25 years. We were still really good friends, and we're really good friends now.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Such a lovely thing. Yeah, it was like a gang.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us about fell running then. What does that mean exactly?
Well, fells in England are basically are just hills and mountains. So it means basically running up several mountains and then running back down them, getting really muddy on the way often and getting really wet. But just kind of, it's like running, except you're just out in the wilds, in the landscape, just loving being part of kind of nature and everything that's around you.
But it sounds much harder than flat running. I mean, if anyone's ever experienced even walking up a hill, it's a lot harder than walking on flat. So I assume running up a hill is even harder.
It is at first, but you absolutely get used to it. When I first started, I just couldn't believe that people were running up these hills and running down these really steep kind of scree slopes and everything. But once I'd done it for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, a couple of months, I thought, yeah, this is fine. I can do this.
And how did you get into that? Because you've been doing this for a while as well now.
Yeah, I got into it because my dad took me. He didn't take me. He met me at the end of the 1980s and said, do you want to meet and watch this fell running, this sport, which I'd never heard of. And we went and watched it. And the winner was like 200 people running in this mountain race. And the winner was this lad with a Mohican haircut. He was a punk rocker from Leeds. And I just thought, well, if he can do it, if he can win, you know, this incredible athletic event, then A, I want to have a go myself, but B, I want to talk to him. I want to find out who he is and what he's doing. And that turned out to be Gary Devine.
Wow. So tell us about Gary then. What's he like?
He's kind of, if you know the meaning of the word taciturn, I'd say he's taciturn. He doesn't say much. He's got a kind of, but he obviously has something in him that means that, you know, when he first got, he got given an album at school by Dead Kennedys, and he kind of changed the way he looked overnight, you know, chopped all his hair off and started wearing punk clothes. And I think he probably brought that sense of adventure and you know, doing his own thing to the fells. You know, he was kind of a bit of a maverick on the fells. Obviously, he looked different, but also he was prepared to kind of take his own routes and not just go out, do the things that everybody else was doing.
I mean, he clearly wasn't your typical runner or sports person. He had a lifestyle of kind of cider and parties and curry and things. And as you say, the way he looked, and he'd turn up and often having ciders and beers and stuff on the way to doing the races. I mean, it sounds so bizarre how he could possibly have been fit enough not only to do the race, but to win.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre. He tells this story about how at some point somebody said to him, you know, imagine how much better, how much faster you would have been if you didn't do all that, if you didn't do that punk rock stuff and stay out at gigs all night and drink so much alcohol. And he said, yeah, but imagine if I hadn't been running, how many more gigs and more cider I would have drunk.
Brilliant.
I think he just liked the extremes. And I think if you're into fell running, you kind of appreciate the fact that you can have a really good time and you know, and you can party or whatever, but because you know that the next day you're going to be going up some Scottish mountain and you win all your brownie points back halfway up the hill.
But I mean, it's just unbelievable to imagine doing that kind of thing with a hangover. I mean, that's A, impressive, and B, utter madness to me.
It is, but you know what? It actually gets rid of your hangover.
Yes.
You know, if you're in a bit of a bad state, literally within half an hour of kind of going up and down some hills, you've kind of sweated it all out and you start feeling fresh and you think, phew, this is great. I'm so glad I get to do this rather than rolling around the house at home feeling miserable and sorry for myself.
Yeah. So at what point did you decide to write the book all about Gary then?
Well, it's kind of been at the back of my mind for ages. When lockdown was announced, I suddenly thought, ah, okay, I probably won't get, you know, a lot of the other work I was doing in things like theatre and you know, arts projects and stuff like that. I thought, I bet it's all going to get cancelled. I'll start writing this book and, you know, really go for it. And of course, I'd carried on getting other work as well. And I was homeschooling, so it was a right pain to do. But it was really enjoyable because I actually just did it because I wanted to do it. I wasn't thinking, oh, you know, who's going to publish this? I just thought, this is a great story.
Yeah. And I guess when you were putting the book together and speaking to Gary and interviewing him and getting all the info, there must have been an awful lot that you didn't know about him beforehand, about his childhood and things.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, there's quite a few things that I kind of remembered that Gary couldn't remember, you know, about those years, because I was kind of running with him a lot of the time. But yeah, a lot of the early years stuff, I found it fascinating. I talked to his cousin Jan, who has this. Considering the, you know, he's a total punk rocker, and considering the kind of lifestyle he led in the 1980s, which he was telling me all about, I just thought, he's brilliant. He just remembers more than Gary will ever remember, and I got loads of information from him. So,
can you give us an example? One of the things that he told you about Gary.
Well, he was talking about this thing where at Gary's house, he lived in Ilkley, and they had this kind of big ramshackle house. His dad was a builder, and they basically every Sunday, the house was just full of people. This huge extended family all came around for Sunday dinner, and everybody kind of just drank all day, and all the kids ran around the garden all day and messed around. And Jan was saying that at some point when he got a bit older, he turned up at the house and he'd become a punk. And he said that Gary and his brother Bradley kind of looked at Jan and were like, what is that? Why have you got zips in your trousers? Why is your hair green? And he said, but then within a month, he went back and Gary was a punk rocker. So
brilliant. And how did Gary get into fell running?
He was doing it from when he was about 10. I think he realised he was a good runner at school. And he had a good, PE teacher who used to take him out at dinner time running. And the PE teacher, you know, was a good runner as well, and tried to encourage him to do like track running and athletics and cross country. But as soon as Gary discovered fell running, he just thought, no, this is the kind of running I like. This is what I want to do.
So he was a fell runner way before he was a punk rocker.
Oh, he was, yeah. He was kind of winning these little junior races as a kind of 11, 12-year-old, little professional races in the Yorkshire Dales where if you'd win, you know, it's like 150 little kids in this race, and you'd win, and they'd give you a brown envelope with £10 note in it.
I, just love the idea that he had like a parallel life. You know, normally you have people who kind of transform their lives and go from one to the other. Someone who's had a bit of a tough life, you know, drinking lots, partying lots, then they stop doing that and get fit and then start to do runs and things. But he was doing both at the same time. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah. And I think he just discovered a really good balance and really enjoyed it, because he really was like running and training, you know, incredibly well. But he could train so well, and knowing that he would be able to go out at night as well, and you know, end up getting arrested and all that sort of thing. But I get, like I said, it's about balance. He would always be thinking, okay, first thing tomorrow morning, I'm out going along Meanwood Trail and out into the woods and trees and everything.
So what did he get arrested for?
I'll put this tactfully, from running away from some police officers.
Okay. Nicely put.
It's in the book.
Yeah, the mind boggles what you were going to say.
Well, I did say to Gary, actually, when all these stories started coming out, and I said, how honest do you want me to be with this? Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's probably not great to put in there.
Yeah.
And he just shrugged his shoulders and said, I don't care. Put whatever you want. but I did. I was a bit careful, because I just thought that, you know, I don't want it to be, you know, lurid and all that sort of thing. So
yeah, fair enough. So I was interested to read what he's up to now. In his mid-50s, lives in the French Alps, and he manages a sun and snow holiday business with his wife.
Yeah, he's got a B&B in the Alps. Yeah,
fabulous.
It's amazing. I mean, basically, he's found a way of transferring his kind of passion for mountain running into his job. And it's a kind of job, you know, he knows that, because when you go and stay at the house that they've got, the B&B, a lot of runners go there, because he takes them out on runs and he takes them out skiing and all that sort of thing. So he's getting to do what he always loved anyway.
Fabulous. And he still runs pretty much every day.
He does, yeah. Yeah, he's always running, yeah.
Amazing. And what about you?
I don't run as much as Gary, I'm sure. but yeah, I do still run. Yeah, I have to. It's just essential. You know, a lot of people have discovered in lockdown how good running is for you. Not necessarily if you know, you don't have to run up and down mountains, but it's just, you know, for your mental health, just for some escape and some time and away from digital technology. It just keeps me sane. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about your writing as well, plays and musicals and things like that. Very different to pop music, or is it?
It is really different as a discipline, and I really enjoy it. You know, writing for characters and writing songs that fit stories and that have to continue, you know, narratives and all that. I love it. And I also love the fact that a lot of the work I do now is collaborating with different people all the time. Whereas with the band, I mean, it was love, absolutely fantastic, but it was basically eight of us for 25 years. And this is great, because I get to try different things out and meet different people and go to different parts of the country, and I'm loving it.
Oh, good. Eight is a big number, though. I remember watching you on TV in the 90s and thinking, gosh, there's loads of them in that band. How come there was eight of you?
It's like Where's Wally, isn't it? we did a thing where, right at the beginning, this when we first got together, we squatted this big Victorian house in Leeds and like took over it and fixed it all up and everything. And I think there were three of us at the beginning. And basically, as our friends and, you know, and people we knew kind of dropped by who didn't have anywhere to live. So, oh, well, we've got some spare rooms if you want to move in. And people would move in, and then you'd go, can you play an instrument? Do you want to have a go? And they'd be like, well. So we ended up with, like, you know, three singers, for instance, just because they couldn't play instruments. But we were like, well, it doesn't matter. You live here. You might as well be in the band.
I love that.
Yeah. And that was how we approached everything. We were like, yeah, you don't have to do it the way everybody does it. Let's just do it our own way.
Yeah. So really inclusive then, you were.
Oh, we were, yeah. And I think it was really important, because there were always, like, you know, there'd always be, say, three women in the band, and that kind of, that really balanced everything out. It stopped it being just like, you know, a bunch of lads drinking a lot and playing loud music.
So. Yeah. And I mean, it was an interesting time when tub thumping really took off, because it was a real party song, and women and men loved it. It, whenever it came on, everyone would jump up and down and sing and drink, and you know, it was a great kind of atmosphere song, wasn't it?
Yeah. And my daughter, my 19-year-old daughter Maisie, she's just started at Liverpool University, and she was in Freshers Week last week, which is basically what they do is they just go out every night, you know, with loads of mates and stay out till the early hours. So she sent us a text message at about 1 o'clock in the morning. It just said, "I'm in a club and they're playing tub thumping." I just thought, that's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I bet at the time when you did it, you had no idea that A, you'd end up with a 19-year-old daughter, and B, she'd be out dancing to your song in a nightclub.
Absolutely. Can you think of anything less likely for me to have thought would happen? Yeah, I would have thought, no, you're on drugs, mate. You're like...
Brilliant. Well, if people want to get a copy of your book, it's available on our website. It's called Faster, Louder, How a Punk Rocker from Yorkshire Became British Champion Fell Runner. And it's by Boff Wally, who we've been chatting to. Boff, thanks so much for joining us. Great to chat with you.
Thanks a lot. That was great.
Truth is, I thought it mattered. I thought that music mattered. But does it bollocks? Not compared to how people matter.